Hello and welcome to another edition of the Spodcasters at KUSports.com. I'm Matt Tate, and I'm joined by two gentlemen, one on my left and one on my right. The one on my right is Tom Keegan. He's the sports editor here, and he has this to say.
Hello, everybody.
Okay. The one on my left is going to have a heck of a time trumping that. His name is Benton Smith. He's our new KUSports.com technical whiz-bang. And he has this to say.
I just learned that I'm a technical whiz-bang.
Fair enough. A lot of good things happening in this podcast already. What we are here to talk about, though, is Kansas basketball. And most specifically, I think it's time to talk about this conference race. We're five games into this thing, and a lot of people out there are floating the idea that this thing is over already. I mean, KU obviously off to a 5-0 start and some big wins already, but 13 games still to go. Tom, is it over?
Well, Yogi's right. It's never over until it's over, but this thing sure feels like it's heading in that direction. I said before, I turned to you before we watched part of the K-State-Texas game.
Right.
I said, I just feel like Kansas is going to just keep getting a bigger and bigger lead and just separate itself because those teams in the upper tier are going to be beating each other up. And none of them are as good as Kansas, and Kansas is just a cut above. So this is going to be one of those years where it's going to be a heck of a race for second place.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at that. Because of that result, Texas beating Kansas State the other night on that crazy three-pointer from the corner at the buzzer after the incredible inbounds play at half court. The 3.9 seconds, they inbound it to a guy who has no business catching an inbound pass that far from the basket. He holds it for 2 seconds and then calls timeout. So they really just wanted to set up the drama or something like that. But anyway, after that result, nobody other than KU has fewer than two losses in this league. And Oklahoma, Texas, K-State, all 4-2. Oklahoma State, 3-2. West Virginia, 3-3. Iowa State, 2-3. And then you've got Baylor at 1-4. Texas Tech's there ahead of them actually at 2-4, and then TCU at 0-6. So simple math tells you it might be over, but I mean, there's still a chance. A lot of these teams still have to play each other. A lot of these teams do still get KU, so they will have something to say about it. But I mean, after what we've seen, Benton, especially with the win at Oklahoma, the win at Iowa State, I mean, do those sort of thing make you think, hey, this thing might really be over?
Yeah, I think the way it's set up for KU, it kind of worked out perfectly for them because they're playing essentially like the top five best teams right off the bat,
right.
You know. So they've already got a win over what were considered the five next best teams in the league. And, I mean, they're 5-0 now, but looking at the rest of the schedule, can you imagine them losing more than three games in the conference?
Right, yeah, and no, not at all.
Right, and then all these other teams already have 2-3 losses, and they're going to lose again probably. So it just, I mean, you hate to make a foregone conclusion this early, but it just looks like that's how it's going to play out.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, they're playing really well. They're playing at such a high level, and they're beating good teams, top 10 teams, you know. So at this point, though, I think two might be the deepest you could go as far as making a case that they're going to lose two games.
Right.
Tom, you've got a theory on that.
Do I have a theory
you
on that?
You do, yeah. I mean, we've talked about it, though. You said, you know, that they probably, you could see them losing in Stillwater.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody could possibly see that happening.
Right.
And then after that, you kind of think maybe they'll lose a game they shouldn't.
Oh, yeah, like a Texas Tech. Tubby will throw some kind of zone at them, and they won't react well to it, and they'll lose. Something like that. So I would say Oklahoma State and then what you would call a fluke loss. Nothing is a fluke loss. If you lose, you lose. But,
right.
You know, I mean, every year there's something you don't expect, just about. I mean, remember when Jake Vosko went nuts?
There you go.
I don't know if his name was Jake, was it?
Yeah.
Or was that the guy from UConn?
That might have been the guy from UConn.
Alan Vosko, maybe.
There was a Jake
Vosko.
Yeah. I think he was the UConn guy.
The shooter from Texas Tech on senior night just went ballistic. And
sure.
Then you've got the TCU loss from last year, which was the weirdest, most whacked out game I've ever seen in my life. It was wild. And so something, you know, will they be favored in every game? I would say that they'll be favored in every game except Oklahoma State. They might not be favored down there.
Yeah, it's possible. But I think if you bet on them to be favored in that, you wouldn't be making a dumb bet either. You know, I think because Oklahoma State's again, they're already with two losses and
Cobbins was their only hope of even slowing down Ellis or MB.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. I think you're probably right. I mean, anything can certainly happen, and the thing that's important to remember about that theory is you're counting on KU to get up for every one of these games, and if they've already got this two-game cushion that could in the next 4 or 5 days even balloon to three, you know, the urgency is gone a little bit. That edge of having to, hey, we have to win this to keep pace, or, you know, last year they had to keep pace and then hang on. And then years before they've had to win to keep the cushion or to keep the gap there.
But so, one thing that does help also is a bench. You've got a really good bench. You've seen him be willing to bench Perry Ellis in favor of Jamari Traylor if he thinks Jamari Traylor is playing better. He'll do that with Black if Embiid gets in foul trouble or if he thinks Embiid's having a bad game. So that helps him. The part that maybe is a little rough as far as the bench on the perimeter, it's a younger bench.
Right, yeah.
It's pretty much freshman dominated.
I thought that was interesting when he talked about the big man rotation this week. Self said, usually, obviously, Embiid's going to start, play 7 minutes, and then Black will come in for six or seven, and then provided Embiid doesn't have foul trouble, he comes and finishes the half. With Jamari and Perry, he said it's hot hand, whichever guy's playing better.
And who does Bill Self really talk to when he's at a press conference? He talks through us, and he talks, you know, about the fans. Who he's really talking to is the players.
And in that specific instance?
In that specific instance, he was talking directly to Perry Ellis.
Yep.
And making that part of the global conversation now, because let's face it, KU basketball is a global topic. I don't think I'm exaggerating.
No, not at all. And you're right. I mean, and here's the thing about that, too. It's not like he won't go to Perry's face and say that to him, too. But it's just all these different buttons to push and levers to pull, and I mean, he's as good as anybody about that.
I'll tell you right here, right now, mark the date and the time, who the player of the game for Kansas is going to be against TCU.
Perry Ellis. Well, let's do this real quick then, since we're talking about the race, and then we'll get into a little more about this team, where they're at right now. We're going to do this by seniority. And Tom, you're going to start because you've been here longer than either of us. If you had to pick another team that you thought could win this league still, who would you pick? Benton, you're going to get last pick, so be prepared there.
I would pick Oklahoma State. It's because you've got a great senior in Marcus Smart, and the ball is in his hands. And the guys who can carry a team the farthest are great point guards.
I'm going to pick I like that pick. That's obviously, if any of us had the number one pick, that probably would have been who we took. But I'm actually going to pick Kansas State. And again, not to say that they'll win it outright or they could win it outright. I don't think that's probably the case because they still have to play KU another game. But that's kind of the thing. They get KU at home one more time, and if they could somehow win that game,
They can't, but go ahead.
Yeah, right. They could find themselves in a position where they push this thing into a shared title again. And maybe that doesn't exactly answer the question that I threw out there. But if KU shares it with anyone, that's almost news at this point.
Oh, yeah, that answers the question, but I don't think that'll happen.
No, I wouldn't bet more than, you know, 5 or 10 cents.
Shillings?
Yeah, shillings.
Except you don't know what a shilling is.
I wouldn't bet a halfpenny on that. But anyway, let's move on to Benton's pick. Well, make your pick, young man.
Well, I was kind of surprised that you picked K-State. I mean, not that it's a bad choice.
You kind of wanted it.
I was thinking that was going to be the one that was left, and I get to go with K-State.
Yep.
I'll go with Iowa State. I like the way they play under Hoiberg. The players love that system. That they seem to really respond well to him. They got off to a bad start in conference play, so that's going to kill them probably.
Yeah.
But given my choices here, I'll go with Iowa State and their talent. And, you know, Kane is amazing.
Yeah.
And he could carry a team to a conference title, I think.
Wisconsin, Ohio State, Oregon, Iowa State. If you add up all their winning streaks at the beginning of the year when they were something in O, and each one of them...
58.
58 it was. Yep. And then when each one of them lost for the first time, it's, what is it,
0-14.
Crazy. That's all over the internet. 58-0
since, or to start 0-14 combined since. I mean, that's one of the most bizarre stats of all time.
It's unbelievable. And it tells you that offhand, I would think that maybe they weren't scheduling aggressively enough.
Yeah, well, right. I mean, Iowa State is, they go from 14-0 to 14-3. And three of those losses are in the league. That's the other thing I want to talk about. How good is this league? I mean, you hear the coaches, and they're, of course, politicking, but you hear these coaches all the time saying, number one RPI league, it's the best top to bottom, all that. I don't think they're necessarily really just selling a bill of goods there. I think this might be the best league top to bottom. I know you said the other day the Big Ten.
I think the Big Ten is heavier at the very top.
Okay.
Because I think there are some teams from the Big Ten who could give Kansas a run for its money in terms of winning the conference.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
And more than one.
Like three, probably.
You got Michigan State, obviously. Not buying Ohio State now. Wisconsin. Has lost four in a row. Wisconsin, maybe. They've lost a couple in a row.
Michigan?
Michigan's coming on without Mitch McGarry, John Beilein.
Yeah. Iowa, though.
Iowa.
Yeah.
Yeah, Iowa's a good team, and it's too bad that Kansas didn't beat Villanova in the Bahamas, because I really wanted to see them face Iowa.
You didn't like the KU-UTEP matchup?
Not nearly as exciting.
Right. I think you're right. That's probably – I think when these coaches talk about that stuff too, they are talking top to bottom, strength of the conference. And in that respect, they probably are right. But I don't know. I mean, KU, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, that's a pretty good 1-2-3 that could beat anybody, probably.
This is a 10-team league, and we'll see how things shake out. But seriously, 6 or 7 teams can make the tournament out of 10.
Yeah.
That's a pretty strong league.
I'd be very surprised if it's anything less than 6.
Right.
And I think 7 definitely, you know, depending on how it goes, could make a run at that. So, overall, I mean, where do you think, again, I want to get back to that urgency thing about having to bring it every night. I really think this Kansas team has flipped that switch, and somehow along the way they decided that, and maybe they didn't decide it, maybe they just, it took some experience, it took some time, I don't know what it was, but it really does seem like playing for Kansas, playing because you're a Jayhawk, means something to those younger guys right now. I mean, I don't know if that was a message from inside the locker room or just, again, being around long enough to really feel that vibe. But I think at first they were just trying to figure out where they fit. And with Wiggins especially, you've got a guy who knew he was only going to be here a little while. And I think...
Well, you can hear about the support, fan support. You can hear about it. And you can try to picture it. And you can see it somewhat on the campus visit.
Yeah.
Because they come and they put on a great show on late night and all that. But until you're Tarik Black and you sprain an ankle, and all of Jayhawk Nation, Jayhawk Universe, we should really say, because it's global.
I heard that somewhere.
Out on Twitter. Just freaks out. Freaks out on our site because Tarik Black, maybe the 7th or 8th best player on the team, might have to miss a couple of games.
Yeah.
You don't experience that until you're here. You can hear about it, but when you're Tarik Black and you're walking around campus and student after student is saying, we're praying for you.
Yeah.
He's got a sprained ankle and he's getting stopped all over campus. We're praying for you to get better. How do you think that makes him feel?
Pretty good.
Yeah. And it makes him feel also like, wow, this is quite a responsibility here.
Yeah, right.
They're taking part of their life because I sprained my ankle and they're devoting their life to praying for me.
Yeah, that's
a good... I'm going to repay it because I appreciate
that. That's a good way to look at it. And he said as much this week, you know, that was one of the reasons he came here. Not necessarily the prayers. That might have come as a surprise to him.
Yeah.
But that family atmosphere, that vibe of just when you come here, you're a part of something. And I mean... It sounded like it really does mean something to him.
Right. I mean, how many times do you think in his years at Memphis, people just came up to him on campus and were like, wow, I really hope you're okay.
Yeah.
How's that slight injury you suffered the other day? Yeah.
They probably had no idea who he was.
Right, exactly.
I mean, you know, other than he's huge.
He played against Kansas when he was a freshman. I remember that game. It was in St. Louis.
There you go.
And it was Josh Pastner's first game. And the Tigers gave
Kansas a run for.
What a coach. I think he's a great coach.
Do you? I think he's a great recruiter, good recruiter, and I think he's developing as a coach.
I think he's done a really nice job and better than I expected. I didn't know if he had it quite yet when they hired him. I thought that was...
Well, that's because he looked 12.
Yeah, and always will. Always will, probably. But anyway, getting back to that whole concept of the love and everything and these guys playing for Kansas and playing for everyone, really. Kansas Universe, as we call it now. Do you
That would be preferable to the fans to us calling it Kansas University.
Preferable to our readers. KU, Kansas Universe.
Yeah.
I get it now. Okay. But, you know, do you think it's as simple as that? I mean, why is this team playing so well right now? I mean, everybody out there is bringing big-time efforts. And, yeah, the other night they had their three best players play pretty poorly against Oklahoma State, wasn't it? Wasn't that the game where Nadir Tharp and Perry and Wiggins and Seldon didn't play all that well?
Yeah, Wiggins
and they still won. Was the point. So, I mean, that's one of the things I've used to explain it is that I think that flip or that switch came on. And
three of their four best players.
Yeah, right. And you realized, they realized that that's what they're here for and this is what it's all about. And it's more than just a stopping ground before you go to the NBA. And I feel like they're here for such a short time that they're just really trying to maximize everything they can get out of it. I think that is as much as anything for why they're playing so well, but I'm open to hearing what else is going on.
No, I think that's definitely a part of it, but I think it just took a while to get to this point because there's so many young players.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot to be said for, you know, chemistry and kind of developing within the rotation and things like that, and that doesn't happen overnight, especially when you have so many freshmen. And I think it's all part of that development for when you're relying on so many guys that have not played together before.
Yeah, and I mean they're still trying to figure that out. Mm-hmm. Coach Self talked this week about we haven't really got it yet because we're still playing 10 guys, and we don't know if Connor Frankamp's going to be this guy this night or if it's going to be Brandon Green or whoever it's going to be, you know. And usually he's kind of got that locked down by now. So there's that constant talk, Tom, about the ceiling and the next step and going to a higher level with this team. I mean, that's constant right now. They're always talking, whether it's coach or the players or whoever. Everybody seems to believe and suggest that there's even more.
Oh, there's a lot more. And there always is with Kansas at this time of the year, but this is the youngest team he's ever had and the most talented, pure talent. So times 10 this year, you know. You always see improvement. You're going to see more improvement. And I think it's good that two guys who are good shooters off the bench recently have had some things that they can feel good about, Connor Frankamp and Brandon Green. And I think Green will get more time than Frankamp, but there's going to be games where you got a lead and all of a sudden that shaky ball handling returns, you're going to see Frankamp come in.
Yep.
Because he's more than a shooter. He's a really good ball handler. He doesn't turn it over. He made that one horrible decision with the shot clock winding down. He's 30 feet away, so he gives it to a center who's 25 feet away. You take the shot. It must not have
That was just the youth thing, the though, right? I mean, I think he was thinking, I'm out here to pass. It's not my show. Here.
So if you want a shooter on the floor, and you need a shooter with size, Brandon Green. If you need a shooter who's going to protect the ball for you and maybe preserve the lead, Connor Frankamp. That's nice to have those two totally different options.
They really do have a number of different looks they can go to, a number of different lineups they can go to. Self-talk this week about they haven't really even been able to throw that small lineup out there yet, and I'm interested to see when that might come into play. You know, you would think a team like Iowa State would be a team that you would throw that out there against, but evidently they didn't. So, and at the same time, why would you, though? I mean, when you've got Embiid just dominating smaller players, there's really no reason to try the small lineup.
Right.
I mean, you might as well ride that guy all the way. So,
because he gives you what small guys give you in terms of quickness.
I mean, incredible talent, no question about it. So, well, real quick before we get out of here, TCU, they're going back to the scene of the crime. Everybody knows what happened down there.
Watched it three times.
Yeah.
I watched that first half three times because I felt like a little bit masochistic and I just wanted to punish myself. I'm telling you,
you know, sometimes you'll see some games at the field house where they'll seem like they take forever, the women's games, some of the women's games, and that half seemed like two of those games.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. I mean, it really was. Somebody talked this week about that, that, just the idea that just layups weren't going in and shots weren't, I mean...
They were shell-shocked.
Yeah.
I think he was too hard on them after losing to Oklahoma State, and they went out there trying not to make a mistake, and nobody wanted to be the one to force the action, and they were just brutal.
Think back to that game. They made a little bit of a run in the second half late.
I'd call it a jog.
Sort of late, yeah, a jog, to where it looked like they might still be able to pull out this game, and... Nadir Tharp is in the game. He's on the wing. If I'm not mistaken, he's got a chance to cut it to one or two or something, and he pulls this incredibly guarded, incredibly just ill-advised three-point shot that ended up missing. And instead of it going from 4-1 or whatever, TCU hit a three on the other end, and it went from 4-7. And that was kind of the last blow that really put it in. That was a sign of the Nadir Tharp that people are seeing now. And well, I mean, he didn't make the shot because right now he's making everything. But
compare his popularity at that point to what it is now.
That's exactly it. I mean, people would have asked him to politely leave the team after that missed shot. And I think that was on message boards and Twitter and everything. And now you almost can't imagine this team without that guy. It's just he's one of the most interesting players that's ever come through here, because it's so weird to see the ups and the downs with him. But he's obviously locked in really well right now too, and I'm sure that's part of why this team's playing at such a high level too. I mean, he's not turning the ball over. He's knocking down shots. Your point guard's doing that. It makes life easier for everybody else. So anyway, getting back to the TCU thing, any reason at all to think that they're going to go down there and have even the slightest difficulty?
I can't imagine that they would. I mean, like Tom mentioned, you know, probably last year maybe Self was too hard on them and they were kind of in, you know, this panic mode, like, let's not screw this up again. And, I mean, obviously their confidence has to be really high right now, and they seem to be, you know, playing with a nice flow and no worries. And TCU isn't talented enough, frankly, to give this team much trouble.
Yeah.
You know, they're coming off a good game, TCU.
At Oklahoma.
Yeah, where they stayed in it.
Yeah, they had they definitely had a chance.
Yeah, so they're not horrible, but I still wonder what happened last year with, like, did they change the atmosphere? And for a week, this is like the Iowa State football theory on the icy field. Did they just, like, pump a little gas from the stove into the building and the players got used to it and were able to play somewhat okay, and then Kansas players came in and they were just groggy from the moment.
That is the icy field theory. I like that. I like that. I mean, there's in athletics, big time college athletics, people go to crazy lengths. And I'm not saying that happened. I'm not saying it would
happen.
And
you're not saying it didn't.
But I'm not saying it didn't. Fortunately, I'm not the one saying it at all, though.
That was Tom Keegan, right?
But, yeah, I think it'll be interesting just to see. I mean, I thought it was really interesting that Self pointed out, hey, this is a team, this is a building that's going to be full, and they're going to be fired up. These fans that come to this game, their last memory of playing Kansas is storming the floor after a victory. So, of course, they're going to be excited, and it's a night game and all that stuff. So I think that'll be really cool to see. Just if they get tested at all. And I'm with you, Benton. I don't know that they probably will. I think they're playing at such a high level right now that they probably go down there and roll pretty good. But the other thing that's interesting that we should point out about TCU, Kavar Shepherd was a guy that KU was recruiting heavily. And Coach Self said this week that they had one scholarship left when he was being recruited. And they offered it to Shepherd. And if he had taken it, that would have meant no Joel Embiid to Kansas. Now, maybe something else crazy would have happened and it would have worked out. But
that's what he said. You're right. You attributed it. Right. Because, I don't know, he might have sat down and had an Andrew Adams conversation with someone else.
Yeah, yeah. You never know. I mean, it's easy to say on the surface.
Right. I mean, yeah.
And you know, especially at a place like Kansas with recruiting where that kind of stuff happens, you know. A big guy will look and he'll see, they've got these guys are coming back, and then this guy's really good already. Maybe I won't get to develop there. Maybe I won't get to showcase myself there, so I'll go somewhere else. So it is possible that is a real, you know.
That's wild.
It is wild, and it's, I'm sure, talk about prayers. You know, these KU fans are probably saying their prayers and whatnot for, you know, the thankfulness that they have for Joel Embiid being here.
It's hard to imagine this team without Embiid, and it certainly wouldn't be performing at this level or, you know, be on its way to a, you know, potential conference title and potential number one seed without Embiid.
Tarik Black would be starting, as he did at the beginning of the year.
And he'd probably be on the bench because he picked up 2 fouls in 2 minutes.
He would have already fouled out of the TCU game.
But you know what? If they didn't, that's an interesting thing, is if they didn't have Embiid, then it'd be a real race for the title, and Kansas would be in it.
Yeah,
Kansas,
yeah, no question.
Very good chance Kansas could come away with the title.
Yeah, as it stands, they are in the driver's seat with no one sitting shotgun. Everybody else is in the back seat right now for 10 in a row. And that's just, you know, 8 sounds incredible, 7 sounds incredible, 9 sounds incredible, but 10. I mean, that's a whole different level of incredible.
And I really don't. This is not the time to bring up.
Let me guess.
That in 1988, I was the beat writer for the Orange County Register covering the Dodgers. The Dodgers win the World Series. I moved to Chicago. The Bulls win 3 NBA titles, their first 3. I moved to New York to work. Yankees win 4 titles in 5 years. Mets get to the World Series. I moved to Kansas. Kansas wins the Orange Bowl. And, you know, national title in basketball in 2008. So I do not want to take credit for Kansas winning 10 consecutive titles. Because I will only have been here for 9 of the 10.
Right, and it's not about you.
It's not right. As I often say.
I actually thought you were going to go to the other level of that, which I probably couldn't have predicted what you just did anyway. But I thought you were going to go to the level of, I'm going to tell you right now that there's no way they'll win 11 in a row. But you didn't go there, and I don't think you can.
How many times do you look at it, though, and you think, oh, geez, they're losing all their starters. And
I know.
Which, this year, they lost all their starters, and they did that once before.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, they've got some work to do. They got to finish the job. But, again, firmly in control of this race and maybe not quite over. But, you know, at this point, if you get to 6, 7, 8, then your just simple math tells you that the other teams are running out of games. So, yeah, you got to feel really good about where you're at as a Kansas player, as a Kansas fan, and as has been the case during most of these consecutive conference victories, if you win the Big 12 and you take care of that, you've got a pretty good chance at being a number one seed. So they're right on pace. It will be very interesting to see where it goes from here on out and just how much better this team gets. We'll see how much better we can get next time on another podcast sometime real soon. But thanks for checking this one out, and enjoy the TCU game.